Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Potrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I am one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm Cassie.
This week we are talking about Chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, which is...
Oh, I'm saying it. Okay. The Death Day Party. I really like this chapter. Spoiler alert.
Are there many chapters you don't really like?
I guess it doesn't count as a chapter, but I was going to say the epilogue.
I feel like we've started most episodes with you saying, I really like this chapter.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. I guess there aren't.
Mind you, Chamber of Secrets is a very good book.
Chamber of Secrets is one of my favorite books. But I love this chapter because it, I think, fleshes out all of these extra little details around Hogwarts while also planting all of these little seeds that are going to be harvested either in this book or in, like, later books.
Well, later on.
Yeah.
There was some stuff I highlighted that I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to just talk to you about and then bring up in 3 years when we get to those books.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun in that sense. And I've learned that a lot of what I love, and I think everybody loves about Harry Potter, is just the feeling of being at Hogwarts along with these colorful characters. And this is an excellent chapter for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I really like this chapter. And it's also a chapter that has not really been visualized in the movies. Like, the Death Day Party doesn't happen in the movie adaptation, and it happens in some of the video games, not all of them. But I think that that makes it a fun chapter to read because, unlike most of the other chapters, we don't have an established visual picture in our heads of what this all looks like, what all these ghosts look like. And so the chapter kind of allows us to use our own imaginations.
Mm-hmm. You saying that now was like, I totally forgot that there wasn't a scene in the movie. I was like,
because
I pictured this so vividly,
right?
And they describe it so vividly.
Yeah.
Or Rowling describes it so vividly, and just there's so many details.
Also, I looked this up when I was doing my research for the chapter. We've been saying Rowling's name wrong.
Rowling. It's Rowling.
I'm really surprised that nobody's copped us on this yet, especially considering we've been copped on
like French pronunciation.
Yeah. Like, we've been pronouncing Madame Pince's name wrong, but nobody's like, hey, you're pronouncing the author's name wrong. And apparently this is a very common thing because it's not said the way it's spelled. To the point where Rowling has said that she's, there we go. To the point where Rowling has said that she's just stopped correcting people because she's so used to the error. But I still feel like it's important to call people by their correct names.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
We need to work on saying J.K. Rowling. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the chapter. I have a timer up. It is Cassie's turn.
Yeah, I wrote a lot.
She has 30 seconds to summarize everything that happened in this chapter. Ready, set, go.
It's October and everyone is sick and cold. Wood is forcing the Quidditch team to practice, but things seem hopeless against the Slytherins' new brooms. Harry gets in trouble with Filch, but nearly headless Nick helps him get out of it, and Harry agrees to go to Nick's Death Day party in return. There, Harry and company see Moaning Myrtle. As they leave, Harry hears the voice again, and they find a lifeless Mrs. Norris under a message that says the Chamber of Secrets has been opened.
Nice. 23 seconds, almost 24.
Nice.
23.75.
Nice.
See, but I looked at the timer as it was going so that I would know to tell you to stop. Not that you've ever come close anyway.
No, it's hard because part of me wants to watch the timer, but you're like 4 feet away from me and it's small. So part of me can't see it. And also I have to read off of my page. So
yeah, that's why
really look
it's
at the
my
timer.
Responsibility. Look, I'm putting it in a way that you could read it. But
I can't.
You can anyway.
I mean, I can make it out, but it's not convenient.
But if you were to like just glance up,
right,
that's something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like there's a lot of little details in this chapter.
Yeah.
And I tried to capture that in the chapter summary, but I had to leave things out. But that's why we talk about the chapter now in detail.
That's why our podcast isn't 30 seconds long.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun to listen to? There's already the Harry Potter lexicon minute. We don't need to produce a minute long podcast. Not that any of those are a minute long that I know of.
Well, I already said 30 seconds, so we're half of that time.
The Harry Potter 30 seconds.
Yeah. So the first thing I highlighted was that a lot of people are getting sick, and specifically Ginny Weasley is looking very pale and is bullied by her older brother, Percy, into taking some medicine.
This felt like whenever I'm sick and you come home and you say, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I feel bad. And you're like, well, have you taken any medicine? And I say, no. And you have to go get the medicine and force me to take it.
Yeah, I mean, you're an adult. You should be able to just except that medicine makes you feel better.
Are you saying that I don't have the excuse of 11-year-old Ginny Weasley?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't.
And with more context, you really don't have the excuse of 11-year-old Ginny Weasley.
Yeah. I don't know. My mom would never let me take medicine.
Okay, but we have medicine.
Yeah.
It's available for you. Yeah. And it makes you feel better. It limits symptoms.
Yeah. Yes, but everybody is sick at Hogwarts because it is the sick time of year. It's October. It's cold. It's rainy. Harry's covered in mud. It's just these are not optimal conditions for health.
Yeah, Harry specifically is not said to have gotten sick despite constantly training in the rain with Oliver Wood and the rest of the Quidditch team.
You forgot Cassie's boyfriend, Oliver Wood. It's great that it never stops being funny.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, Wood is really going on these Quidditch practices. I mean, like usual, but there is a real concern over the Slytherins' new Nimbus 2000 brooms that we were introduced to in the previous chapter.
Yes, the team gets an update from Fred and George who went spying. Mm-hmm. And the Slytherins were a green blur, according to the twins.
Yeah. And it's the whole team that has them.
Yeah, it's not just Harry who has the overpowered broom this time.
Yeah. So one could argue that this is, in a sense, leveling the playing field a little bit to Harry having the ridiculous broom, but this is the whole team. So Wood is really drilling them on these Quidditch practices, even though the weather is terrible. Mm-hmm.
We also get a very important update on Hagrid's pumpkins, which are growing to the size of a garden shed.
I knew you would enjoy that.
They got to keep getting bigger. Unfortunately, they are harvested during this chapter, so we don't get perpetual updates throughout the book.
They are harvested during this chapter. Well, aren't pumpkins a seasonal vegetable? Like, they would have to be harvested.
Yes, yes.
They
wouldn't just winter keep is growing. Coming up.
Yeah.
But it would be fun if, for magic reasons, they just kept growing throughout the school year.
Yeah, but it does
and
say...
And then all the kids rode home in... pumpkin carriages.
Just like Cinderella.
Yeah.
It does say that the pumpkins are large enough to fit three grown people inside of them by the time they're harvested.
When they're turned into jack-o'-lanterns. Like three grown men fit inside a jack-o'-lantern.
That's... So I think Hagrid has achieved a lot here.
Now, how many Hagrids could fit in one of those pumpkins?
Do we know how big Hagrid is?
We know how big his feet are.
No,
baby
we
dolphin
don't.
Size.
Wasn't it the boots? Yeah, no, they are baby dolphin sized. Okay, I'm going to Google how big is Hagrid. Okay, this is coming from the Wikipedia page, Rubius Hagrid. In Philosopher's Stone, Hagrid is mentioned as being twice as tall as the average man and nearly five times as wide. But in the film, he is portrayed as being 8'6". And in later books, he is said to be three times as wide. Do you think Hagrid went on a diet and became...
Do you know what books?
And went down. It just says later books.
Okay. Because it may be that he was losing weight as he was... working out more or really stressed out or lost in the forest.
Sure. But I would like to think that if these pumpkins can fit three fully grown men, that Hagrid can probably fit in one of them.
So one Hagrid or three fully grown men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ideally.
Yeah. If you like...
Maybe skinny Hagrid in the later books.
Yeah, later book Hagrid, absolutely, when he lost like 2/5 of his weight.
Yeah.
And I guess considering he's twice as tall as a man, maybe it's him he like squatting down. Like mm-hmm. he's fetal position in this pumpkin.
I don't know about fetal position. Okay. All right. Well, Harry is at Quidditch practice and he gets covered in mud, which seems weird if they're flying. Rain? Sure. Mud? How?
Crashing into the ground.
I don't think that's part of Quidditch practice.
I think if you're practicing really hard, it's happening.
Okay.
I think that Harry might have been used as target practice by the Weasley twins.
Okay. And I don't know if Wood would tolerate that.
Well, Harry was supposed to dodge them.
Okay.
That was part of Harry's training.
Okay. So you're saying, it's practice for Harry to dodge the bludgers and it's practice for Fred and George to lob them at him.
Yes. And okay. Fred and George won that practice.
Okay. So that's how Harry gets muddy. It's canon now because apparently you can just go online and say things and unfortunately they have to be integrated into the canon. Anyway, so Harry marches himself into the castle all muddy and runs into nearly headless Nick.
By the way, what's the other option? Go into the castle muddy or what?
Use the showering spell. I don't know. Harry runs into nearly headless Nick, who we haven't seen in a while, and I'm very happy to.
To not see in a while or to finally see?
No, to finally see him. This is what I mean about like running into all those like minor Hogwarts characters that provide the like really fun backdrop. So I'm happy to have nearly headless Nick back.
Yes, nearly headless Nick is gloomily looking out the window.
Yes, he's fussing over a transparent letter.
I loved that. I highlighted this. So he sees Harry and talks to him and says like, oh, well, what's bothering you, Harry, to try and avoid being asked the same question, and folds a transparent letter and puts it in his pocket. Is there invisible ink? Is there?
I have so many questions about this.
Like, I guess ghosts can't really interact with physical things, so they would need ghost things. But how do you kill a piece of paper?
Right. Okay, so how do they write mail? How do they send and receive the mail? Like, they can't just give the transparent letter to an owl to carry.
A dead owl?
Are there owl ghosts?
I don't know.
That seems horrifying. Yeah, this is very weird. There was a note on the Harry Potter lexicon about this that said, this chapter confirms that ghosts can send and receive mail, which I found very funny.
Yeah.
And then, like, what happens to the letter when they're done with it?
I don't know. I feel like if killing paper is complicated, like maybe you have to die holding paper. Maybe
but
someone
then there's
has to
a
die
limited
holding
supply
paper.
Of paper.
Yeah, that's why you wouldn't just get rid of that letter. You gotta erase and reuse.
Because they use pencils. The ghosts.
The ghosts use ghost pencils.
They use dead pencils.
I mean, like, I don't think they get. Well, no. Nearly Headless Nick wears a different outfit.
Yeah, that's true.
He gets dressed up in ghost clothes.
Yeah. I'm not sure how
I don't
well
know how the ghost economy works or
all of this works. Like, I don't
we
think
just get a small glimpse into the ghost world, and clearly there's a lot more to it.
Ghost world, like the movie.
I don't know what that movie is.
We watched
Ghost World.
Yeah, honestly, I don't remember anything about it either. What's his name is in it? The Hello Fellow Kids guy.
I don't know what that is.
What?
Hello Fellow?
Hello Fellow Kids guy.
Hello Fellow Kid. Oh,
yeah. What's his name?
The
creepy looking guy.
Yeah, creepy guy.
Oh my God, what is his name?
He's the creepy guy and everything. Someone with a B.
I want to say Willem Dafoe, but it's not Willem Dafoe.
No.
Oh my God, what is his name?
I'm just Googling creepy actor.
Just Google Hello Fellow Kids guy.
No. Creepy actor, Steve Buscemi.
Thank you. Okay, Steve Buscemi. How did we... Oh, Ghost
By
World.
The way,
okay.
The second response to creepy actor, it goes Steve Buscemi, then Willem Dafoe.
I mean, Willem Dafoe is very creepy.
Christopher Walken and Jack Nicholson.
All, at least the first three, all look very similar.
It's the, like, really receded eyeballs.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi's, though, are, like, receded but also popping out somehow. Like, his eye socket is receded and then his eyes are just like bulging because like,
well, the problem is his eyes are where they're supposed to be and then his eye sockets are receded.
Yeah, I what a wild looking person. All right, so we get this glimpse into the ghost world and none of the details that we find make any kind of logical sense, but again, it's magic, so whatever.
Jared Leto is pretty high on this list.
I hate Jared Leto.
Yeah, I gotta stop looking at this list.
Is Eddie Redmayne on it?
Gary Busey's on it. Michael Cera's on this
Michael
list.
Michael Cera is a weird looking dude. I like Michael Cera though.
Cillian Murphy or Killian Murphy?
Oh God.
I think he's the guy from...
He's in Sunshine and he's also in some of the Batman movies, I think. And he was in a James Bond movie that I unfortunately saw. God,
he looks a lot like the weird guy from the Fantastic Beast movies.
He does look like Eddie Redmayne.
No, the
oh, Ezra Miller?
Sure.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Ezra Miller, I don't think he's as weird looking.
The movies, he's made to be very weird looking.
Yeah. Okay, maybe you should close that.
All right, I'm closing out of that. Why were we talking about the ghost Steve world, Buscemi?
Which goes to Steve Buscemi. And yeah, okay. So the ghost world doesn't make any sense.
Did we watch all of the ghost world?
We did. It's just called Ghost World.
Okay.
And yes.
I don't remember it at all.
Okay. The girl is in it. Thelma Birch?
The girl?
Something like that. And I think Scarlett Johansson is in it too. It's an old movie. It's from the 90s.
Does he work in like a video store or something?
Yeah, I think so. I really don't remember this movie either. We definitely watched it. Okay, we need to stop talking about Ghost World. All right, there's another important detail here, though. Harry can see right through Nick out the window.
Yes.
Very minor detail. Not going to talk about it anymore, but this will come back later. But Nick is very sad because he was rejected from the Headless Hunt.
And we come in at a weird point. Harry shows up and nearly headless Nick is muttering, just half an inch, just half an inch. And he, in such a lovely way, describes that half an inch of skin and sinew is the only thing holding him back from joining the Headless Hunt.
Yes. I don't know. I didn't find that particularly gory or anything. We have to see him in the movie pull his head down and then put it back on. So...
Yeah,
whatever.
That's fair.
His name is nearly Headless Nick.
No, I know. It's just like the idea of like he knows exactly how much skin is left.
Well, this is clearly something that deeply upsets him. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the Headless Hunt is a clear reference to Headless Horsemen in English folklore. Mm-hmm. They kind of recur throughout there. I think the best known version, at least for us, of the Headless Horseman is Sleepy Hollow, which is written by Washington Irving and is a American folktale. But yeah, that I think is the best known version of the Headless Horseman myth, mostly because they made a movie with Johnny Depp in it about it. I don't know if you've seen it. It's not good. I don't like Johnny Depp. Have you been to Sleepy Hollow, actually?
I don't know.
Okay.
Is that like a town?
Yes. Yeah, it's an actual town in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got like little headless horsemen on their street signs.
That's cute.
It is. It's kind of cool. But one of the best known also headless horsemen in mythology is the Green Knight in Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which I think I've brought up before on this podcast. We don't need to talk about it in detail. I actually really like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, but it's from the Arthurian legendarium of myths, and in it the Green Knight does ride around on horseback with his head under his arm. So what Rowling is specifically referencing here, I don't know if she even is specifically referencing any one of these many, many, many headless horseman myths, but it is a clear allusion to that, and it fits the time period, I guess, because we kind of associate Sleepy Hollow as being like a Halloween story. Mm-hmm. And so it's October, it's Halloween that Nick's death day is, so it fits. Yes, Nick, so we get this.
Imagine decapitating someone on Halloween. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, what's the problem?
I don't know exactly the situation in England in 1492. 1492?
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't matter to England, though.
Not really, no. I mean, other things were happening at
other
the
things
time,
were happening,
but it's a significant
Spain,
year for a different country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the leader...
But yeah, like, Halloween wasn't holiday at that point.
Oh God. Do we have to go back to our episode from Philosopher's Stone where we talked about like what Halloween is like in England?
No, I don't remember us talking
how
about it.
We did, because we were like, do they trick or treat in England? Okay. I just Googled how did Halloween start? And this is from the BBC. Halloween began as the festival of Samhain, It was part of the ancient Celtic religion in Britain and other parts of Europe. At the end of the summer, the Celts thought the barrier between our world and the world of ghosts and spirits got really thin. It was all about scaring away the ghosts and spirits.
Do we have a year?
I mean, if it was the Celts, it was a long time ago. I Googled, when did Halloween start? And Google popped up Saturday, October 31st, 2020. History.com says the Celts lived 2,000 years ago.
Okay.
So they predate Nick being beheaded.
All right. So it was kind of a holiday when Nick was beheaded.
Sure. Maybe not how we think of the holiday, but it seems like it. My degree is in English, not in history. So.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah. Sorry. One of my degrees. So what were you saying?
I know. It just seems like, especially if in that time period, people were thinking, okay, we're really close to, like, the veil between the living and the dead is very thin. Let's add a ghost who is clearly going to be mad at me.
Well, I don't think they intentionally made a ghost.
Well, they intentionally beheaded.
Right.
They intended to behead someone.
Right. We'll get a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit about the circumstances of Nick being beheaded when we get to the death day party. So hang on.
The death day party?
Yeah.
Not now?
Let me.
Okay. You do you.
But yeah, Nick was rejected from the Headless Hunt, and the leader of the Headless Hunt is Sir Patrick Delaney Podmore, P-O-D-M-O-R-E, not like Pottermore. That's a weird little thing, although Pottermore's not a thing anymore, apparently.
At all?
Well, everything's been moved to wizardingworld.com.
Right.
I'm going to keep saying Pottermore, though.
Yeah, that's what it was for...
forever.
Yeah.
Or at least since like 2009 when the thing launched. Anyway, Sir Patrick Delaney Podmore. There's not a lot of info about him that I could find, but in book five, we will meet a Hogwarts student named Sturgis Podmore, who fans speculate might be a descendant of Sir Patrick.
Okay.
There's been no confirmation besides the last name. So yeah, we can talk about Sturgis Podmore in like 5 years.
Sounds good.
Yep.
While Nearly Headless Nick is clearly not his favorite name.
Mm-hmm.
He does go by Nick a lot.
Yeah.
But I like
get
that
with the times.
As an insult, but also like in a jealous way, he calls Podmore Sir Properly Decapitated Podmore.
Yeah. I mean, he knows what the kids call him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, but that is funny. And I like this little exchange between Harry and Nick because it's not a friendship I think that we think too much about. Like when we think of Harry's friendship, of course we think of Ron and Hermione, we think of Hagrid, but he kind of has this relationship with Nick that I think is kind of sweet. And it's sweet that Harry and Nick get to kind of vent to each other and help each other solve their problems.
Yes.
I don't know, it's just kind of cute.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's clearly like not a strong relationship.
No.
It's more of like a passing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they're both Gryffindor, they feel tied together.
Yeah.
And they were both in a bad mood, so they were happy to help each other out.
Yes. And that ends up benefiting Harry. So Filch comes along, sees all the mud that Harry is tracking through the castle and gets real mad.
Well, before that, Nick does try to warn Harry.
Yes.
Says, all right, that's Mrs. Norris.
You better
Filch's
go.
Cat. You better get out of here.
Coming.
He's been upset. There's been brains spilled on the ceiling.
Frog brains.
Frog brains.
Specify.
On the side. So he's not happy.
Yes. I feel bad for Filch in this chapter. And this is something that we've talked about several times, but the idea that one person is responsible for cleaning the entire castle and patrolling the castle, and he does not use magic. The circumstances of that we'll learn kind of in this chapter more in later chapter, but he has to do all of this without magic. So Nick saying like, yeah, he's pissed because he's been cleaning all day. He's going to see you tracking this mud in and be even more upset. I can't blame him.
Now, he is clearly supposed to be cleaning. He's the caretaker.
Yeah.
Is it up to him to patrol and punish students?
I don't
know
about...
Or does he take that on for himself?
I don't know about punishing students, but he seems to be patrolling the castle at night.
He does patrol the castle.
And I assume that's one of his responsibilities. We see kind of in later books that the professors also patrol the castle at night, so it might not be exclusively Filch's responsibility.
There was like a sign up in the faculty lounge and he took a lot of slots.
Maybe he volunteered for it, but it still feels messed up. Even if we ignore the patrolling the castle bits, it feels messed up that he has to clean the entire castle manually.
Yes, all alone.
Yeah.
Except for when he punishes students and makes them do it.
But like, I don't know. I think that's a legit punishment. Like, hey, you wrecked this thing. You made this thing dirty. Help me clean it up. You have to understand that this is part of your responsibility. Like, if a kid causes a food fight in the cafeteria, make them clean it up so that they can see how they're inconveniencing everyone. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Filch maybe reacts appropriately, and I can't condone him wanting to chain students up.
But I can see him as just like he's very bitter.
Right.
He does not have a good situation.
No.
And I can see being surrounded by magical children with a magical future aggravating him.
And it feels exploitative as well. Like, they could just hire somebody who can magic the castle clean in minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, the professors could do that. Like, hey, if you see something dirty, just, you know, whip your wand around a couple times and it'll be clean. And I'm not saying put Filch out of a job or anything, but like, I don't know. This is a complicated thing and we have to talk about it partly because of Quickspell, but we can't talk about it fully because an important piece of it isn't really discussed or exposed until the next chapter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Filch gets mad at Harry. He drags Harry into his office and there's a good line here saying that like Harry is tracking even more mud throughout the castle by following Filch to his office.
Yes.
But Filch takes him to the office. He's filling out a form that says like name. Crime.
Yes, and then it's re-emphasized of like, sure, it's only a little bit of mud to you, but to me it's an extra hour of scrubbing.
Yeah.
And then he writes down for the crime, befouling the castle.
That was funny.
And then we have a loud noise, and immediately Filch is convinced it's Peeves, mm-hmm. and runs out.
Yes.
With Mrs. Norris in tail.
Yes. And Harry is left in Filch's office and he sees a letter on the desk, which he opens and reads.
Clearly, it was an open envelope that was just like folded back over. There's
sure.
no way Harry
but he,
really. No, I'm not saying it was right, but I'm saying like there's no way he opened this and thought he would be able to get away with it.
And it's no, it seems like the way it's written, it seems like he opens it and starts reading it. Let me go to that. Place.
Like he opens the envelope, but I don't think it was sealed anymore.
Oh, it wasn't sealed, so it's fine.
I'm saying if it was sealed, there was no chance he would have gotten away with it.
Okay, sure. But he's still opening and reading somebody else's mail,
yeah,
which in
again,
the
I'm
US
not defending
is a
it.
Felony.
I am not defending it, but...
Yeah, and it ends up being a letter from an organization called Quickspell, which is a correspondence course for people who are bad at magic, basically. And there's all these like customer testimonials that say like, oh, I used to be an embarrassment to my family and then I took Quickspell and now I'm better. Thanks, Quickspell. Honestly, it reads a little bit like a diet pill ad.
Yes, it is one of those like just a regular scam. Pretty much. That's what it reads like.
It does read that way.
Also, the first testimony is from someone from Top Sham.
Okay.
Sham.
So this is something that I also kind of looked into when I was looking into Quickspell, whether this was actually a scam. Apparently, there's been some debate about this. I've seen people saying like, yeah, it's clearly a scam. Look at the way it's written. Whereas other people saying like, well, there's not really evidence in the books to suggest it's a scam. And later on, I don't remember which book it's in, the ministry actually recommends a different course by Quickspell for students who do poorly on their newts, I think.
Okay.
So like the organization itself might be fine. The reputable...
There's no way you can fail after these courses.
Yeah, I think
it does take into account like all the testimonies are of I could do very poor magic.
Right. And I think that's what's important here is that, again, we can't really talk about the circumstances of this, but Filch should not be taking this course. It will not work for Filch. And Rowling wrote on her website that it does not work for Filch. Mm-hmm. So you can look at it, I guess, as kind of exploitative on Quickspell's part to allow Filch to take the course. But I mean, like, think about somebody like Neville, who we know isn't really great at magic. A course like this might legitimately help him.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a scam. It definitely feels like one,
it's
though,
worded
with the way
as
it's written.
One.
Yeah.
It really is worded as one. But it's also like an ad for a college. Those always seem really hokey and cheesy.
Yeah, sure.
Whether it's a good college or not.
Yeah. I was also researching whether there were other correspondence courses available to wizarding folks. And there is something on Pottermore that does say that there are other good correspondence courses out there that are good for like young magical kids. Because there is always this question of like, do wizarding children go to school prior to going to Hogwarts at age 11? But yeah, it did say that there are other good, excellent correspondence courses, especially for wizards who can't really like reach schools like those in rural areas. So I thought that was interesting. And timely right now, because we're all switching to distance education because there's a crisis right now. Anyway, we're talking about Harry Potter, not current events.
Yeah. But also, speaking of current events, who knows what's going to be happening by the time this goes out. So
this one will go out not too long after we're recording it.
Okay. We're actually catching up.
Yeah, we are.
That also means we're falling behind. But.
We're falling behind, but the listeners are catching up. Yeah. This one will be like 2-3 weeks after we record it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was that loud crash.
Loud crash. And when he comes back in, Filch is happily exclaiming, "That vanishing cabinet was extremely valuable." And he's talking to his cat, by the way.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
"We'll have Peeves out this time, my sweet."
This is the first mention of the vanishing cabinet, but it is not the first appearance of the vanishing cabinet.
Okay.
If you will recall, in the Nocturnale chapter, I don't remember what the chapter is called or the number, Harry hides in a cabinet at Borgin and Burke's. That is the other vanishing cabinet.
How do you know?
I do. We will see a lot more mentions of the vanishing cabinet as the series goes on, both mentions and like significant appearances of it. Fun little detail about the vanishing cabinet, though. According to the Harry Potter lexicon, it is a reference to the magician's vanishing cabinet, like real world magicians, which they use to like make items or people disappear, usually by having like a false bottom that drops out and the item drops.
Or just mirrors.
Mirrors, something like that. I don't know. I'm not a magician, thank goodness.
A lot of them you get kind of smushed into angled mirrors.
Okay. I guess, yeah, okay. I think I had like a box or something when I was a kid and had like a little magic kit that just had like a false bottom that you pull out and then push back in.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a hidden drawer kind of. But I never put that together. I never connected the Harry Potter vanishing cabinet to the like magician's vanishing cabinet.
Okay. That's just like common
magic. You just got
stuff.
That? Okay. I mean, again, I also did not understand until very recently that Diagon Alley was diagonally.
you really go for the big picture stuff.
Yeah. Most of the time I misunderstand that too. Anyway, Filch comes back in.
So Filch comes back in and then he sees the letter not in the right spot and gets very red, very angry, and like tries to tell off Harry while also denying everything at the same time and like mixing things around.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see the track of like to follow each separate thing he's trying to talk about. Mm-hmm. All in, like, there's three sentences going on at the same time. Did you read? I thought if you'd read my private, not that it's mine for friends, be that it's may, however, very well go, don't breathe a word, not that, however, if you didn't read, go now.
This is reminding me, you know that episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when they're making like a campaign ad and they read Charlie's script for it?
Every time Charlie writes in that show, it's
I understand that it's supposed to be like Filch is flustered and just kind of like jumping between.
And this
excuses,
is me shoving together all the things he said,
right?
Without like the extra,
yeah, just
like you, what Harry is doing and whatever.
You reading it reminded me of that. Yes. So Harry just kind of gets to go off scot-free.
Yeah.
And
he's just like, just get out of here. I'm going to write up Peeves. tell no one, but also nothing happened.
The idea of Filch writing up like documentation about why Peeves is an issue is very funny.
Yeah.
So Harry on his way out hooks up again with Nick, who arranged that diversion.
Yes. He's like, oh, did it work? Are you all good?
Which is so sweet. He's like, hey, you listened to me. You heard out my problem. So like, yeah, I'm going to help you out. It was my fault that you were caught in the castle and that Filch found you. So I'm going to help you out.
Yeah, it was very sweet. And then we find out Nick wants something from him.
Yes. Well, I don't know if it was Nick's motive. I don't think he was like, I'm going to save Harry so that he owes me one.
No, I don't think that was the mindset, but it was like, you know, if you're offering.
Yeah. And he invites Harry to his death day party and asks him to say in front of Sir Patrick, like, hey, just let him know that you find me real scary.
Very frightening and impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of establishes, I think, the main thing for this chapter, which is Nick's death day party, which is a celebration of the day he was killed. Nick tells Harry that Hermione and Ron are also invited. Mm-hmm. Hermione is jazzed about this. She's like, we must be some of the only people to ever be invited to a death day party. This will be fascinating.
I know. Fascinating. Like, of course, she hears, let's go to this party and says, it'll be educational.
Oh, she's the best. Ron is less thrilled.
Well, Ron is grumpy from doing homework and says it's going to be depressing. And the mood in this party is very weird.
And to be fair to Ron, there is, when they go down to the death day party, it's on Halloween. And so they're like walking by the Great Hall, which is filled with Halloween decorations and where they're having a feast and Hagrid's giant pumpkins.
And rumors of skeleton dance troupe.
Do you think this is a reference to the skeleton dance?
Is that a song? Is that I've seen skeleton dancing videos, but like, are you talking about a specific thing or a specific dance move?
Okay, listeners, we just watched the Disney skeleton dance cartoon and Joe has never seen it, which is shocking.
How old is it?
Very, like, 30s maybe.
Okay. I've seen plenty of videos of skeletons dancing.
Okay.
Either cartoon form or weird live action or like puppet ish.
Okay. I don't.
Marionette, I think is the word I'm looking for.
Okay. I don't want to know about the videos you watch on the internet.
Lots of skeletons dancing.
Okay. You can't blame Ron for being a little put out that they're missing the feast, especially when we see what the death day party is actually like.
Well, he specifically says it'll be depressing because they're celebrating
his death
instead of like his birthday or whatever, an accomplishment. It's like, no, here's the day you were beheaded or just not beheaded.
But I think that Nick is over his death by now.
Yes, this is his 500th death day.
Yes.
And which is why he's throwing the party. I don't think he does it every year.
And it's also a really important detail because we learn at the party there's like a placard or something that says
it's his cake. His cake says
he was killed on October 31st, 1492. So this is the chapter that establishes the canonical timeline for the Harry Potter series because it's his 500th death day. So 1492 plus 500 is 1992. So this is happening on Halloween of 1992.
Yep.
This is where that comes from, which I think is so funny.
This is the first time that we figure out when this is happening.
The only time. I mean, we get obviously like references to dates and everything, but I don't think ever any other time to years. There is that one issue where they mentioned Dudley's PlayStation, which
hadn't come out at the time.
Yes. Right. But this is, I think, the only time they mentioned the year. And I remember years after the fact, like after I had read all these books, reading on the internet that it happens in the 90s. And I guess I had just glossed over this when I had read it before. And I was like, oh, my God, it does. And it totally spun me.
Well, the weirdest part is so much of this book is just it takes place outside of time. Like there are no modern things happening for the most part. The wizarding world is behind the times in everything. Because they have their own ways to do things. They don't need to upgrade their technology.
Right. And so it really doesn't matter that much. but it's still odd to think about. So they go to the Death Day party. And this is where I want to talk about the circumstances of Nick's death, because there is a cut song from this chapter. Originally, Nick was going to sing a ballad for everyone at the party. Rowling's editor did not like the song and suggested that she cut it out. But I have it and I'm going to read it, not sing it. It was a mistake any wizard could make, who was tired and caught on the hop. One piffling error, and then to my terror, I found myself facing the chop. Alas for the eve when I met Lady Grieve, a-strolling the park in the dusk. She was of the belief I could straighten her teeth. Next moment she'd sprouted a tusk. I cried through the night that I'd soon put her right, but the process of justice was lax. They'd brought out the block, though they'd mislaid the rock, where they usually sharpened the axe. Next morning at dawn, with a face most forlorn, the priest said to try not to cry. You can come just like that, no, you won't need a hat, and I knew that my end must be nigh. The man in the mask, who would have the sad task of cleaving my head from my neck, said, Nick, if you please, will you get to your knees? And I turned to a gibbering wreck. This may sting a bit, said the cack-handed twit, as he swung the axe up in the air. But oh, the blunt blade, no difference it made, my head was still definitely there. The axeman he hacked, and he whacked and he thwacked. Won't be too long, he assured me. But quick it was not, and the boneheaded clot took 45 goes till he floored me. And so I was dead, but my faithful old head, it never saw fit to desert me. It still lingers on, that's the end of my song. And now, please applaud, or you'll hurt me.
It's very good.
I enjoyed it. It has a very Lewis Carroll vibe to it, both in kind of like the sing-songy rhyminess and just the overall humor of it. You know who Lewis Carroll is?
No.
He wrote Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
Especially the line, which one was it? The Axeman he hacked and he whacked and he thwacked. It reminded me a lot of the Jabberwocky.
Okay, yeah. So 45 swings?
45 swings, yes.
Okay.
But yeah, I thought that was really fun. I see why it was cut, because tonally, I don't think it would have really fit. And although it's kind of a
the
fun...
The tone of this yeah. whole party is interesting.
It's weird.
Because it is, in some ways, they are mourning. In some ways, they are having a party. But also, their ghosts in the party is weird.
Yeah. And then, like, the Headless Hunt rolls in and they're all, like, playing games and throwing their heads around. And so it's...
And they seem to be exclusively about games.
Yeah.
When Nick receives his rejection letter and reads it to Harry, it specifically mentions that he can't be part of it because he can't take his head all the way off, which would prevent him from... horseback head juggling and head polo.
Yes. Two things. One, in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets for the Game Boy Color, which is the best adaptation of a Harry Potter book, bar none, you do get to bowl with ghost heads. It's a very fun little mini game.
That's cute.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. The music is very good for it too. Secondly, this is a conversation I want to have. Do you think Nick should have been admitted to the Headless Hunt?
I think it's unfortunate for him that he was not. But if a lot of the activities involve, like, literally playing with their heads and he cannot take it off.
I don't think so. I don't think
so. Difficult. Yeah. You know, he would not. He would be there, but he wouldn't be able to participate in a lot of stuff.
Right.
He could just, like, have his head flap around behind him.
Yeah. And it seems like it is like a prestigious organization among the ghost community, or at least
it didn't seem prestigious at all. It seemed like a comedy troupe.
Or at least it seems prestigious to Nick.
And yeah, it was something that Nick wanted to be part of.
Right. And I think part of that might just be because it seems like they're the only ones that we've seen, at least aside from maybe Peeves, that have found a way to have fun with their ghost state.
Maybe
that makes sense.
I mean, judging just by this party is difficult because it seems like it's supposed to be more of a sorrowful thing. Like,
right.
You know, he does bow them in. He's dressed in all black and mm-hmm. he is
It's a somber event.
It's a somber event. And I think that what they come in doing...
It feels inappropriate.
...is inappropriate for the party and the situation.
Right. But I have to wonder if part of why Nick wants to join the Headless Hunt is that it is like a fun, merry... Like a fun thing to do, a fun thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason he would want to be in it.
But I think part of it might also be insecurity.
I don't think that's the only way, you know, he could have fun. And
right. Yes, absolutely. It's just, yeah, it's just an interesting question that, like, of course we feel bad for Nick because he wanted something and didn't get it. And we like Nick. So, of course, we feel bad for him. But I kind of agree. I don't think he should have been let in because how is he going to do any of this?
Yeah, he would have to be like a bystander.
Yeah. Speaking of the party, though, we meet another ghost here.
Yes, a ghost that
I love dearly.
But Hermione does not.
Miserable, moaning, moping Myrtle. I love her so much.
So they see her from across the dungeon. And Hermione recognizes her. Nobody else does.
Yeah. And Hermione's like, oh, no. Oh, I don't want to talk
to
Myrtle.
Turn back. I am not dealing with her today.
Yeah. And Harry and Ron are like, what? What's the problem? She's like, oh, she haunts the girls' bathroom. She's so annoying. It's awful to hear her crying when you're trying to pee.
What floor is the bathroom supposed to be on? Because here it says the first floor.
It does say the first floor.
I thought it was the second floor bathroom.
I thought it was the second floor bathroom, too. We're going to have to track this. As I said in a previous episode, the whole book happens in a bathroom. So we'll see. But let's talk about Moaning Myrtle.
Yes.
So I dug up some stuff on Moaning Myrtle. Moaning Myrtle's name was originally Wailing Wanda.
Okay.
I like Moaning Myrtle more.
Moaning Myrtle is better.
It is.
Wailing Wanda's not bad.
It doesn't sound as sad.
Yeah, I almost feel like Wanda is a happy name in general.
You might be associating it with the Fairly Odd Parents.
Which is a great show.
Okay. I think Moaning Myrtle was the right choice. I'm glad that Rowling changed it.
But also, as Moaning Myrtle describes herself later in a very like self-pitying way, the M is necessary for miserable, moaning, moping Myrtle.
Yeah. So originally Wailing Wanda. According to Rowling's Twitter, her full name is Myrtle Elizabeth Warren.
When was this put out?
2015. Part of me would like to think this is a reference to Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, but it's too on the nose even for Rowling. What on earth? And like, even if she did not intend to make it a reference to Elizabeth Warren, it reads as one. And what is she trying to say about Elizabeth Warren?
I don't know. And like,
it's crazy.
Was there context to the tweet that she sent out?
Somebody asked what Moaning Myrtle's full name was, and she replied, it's Mary or Myrtle Elizabeth Warren. The Harry Potter wiki does speculate that it's a reference to two characters accused of being witches in The Crucible, Elizabeth Proctor and her servant Mary Warren. I feel like that's a bit of a stretch, but I don't know what better explanation there is for this. Warren is a really common surname, mm-hmm. and Elizabeth is a very common name. Myrtle, we can talk about more in detail, but just putting them together.
But also, like, the context of that, the servant was who, Warren?
Mary Warren.
Mary Warren. So if you think that... She had kids and that got passed down. So the servant in sort of like an honoring way, here's my master's first name as your middle name.
Yeah, but the Crucible is an American thing.
Okay.
Moaning Myrtle is British.
Okay.
So I don't think she's meant to be a descendant of them. I don't know.
I don't know.
This is a very weird thing to come out of Rowling's Twitter. And there are a lot of weird things on Rowling's Twitter, but this one is... And like 2015, she had... And like, I'm not saying that it's American politics are the most important thing in the world and everybody needs to be aware of them. But knowing Rowling's politics, I have to imagine that she was aware of who Elizabeth Warren was, because Elizabeth Warren was a household name in 2015, at least in America. And again, with how Rowling, I just, what the heck? It's so weird.
It is very weird.
I don't know. I don't have any guesses as to why that is what it is. My only hope is that she wrote it down on something, on a sheet of paper in 1997 when Elizabeth Warren was not in politics, and just never resurfaced it until 2015 and didn't see it worthwhile to change it. But, oh, man.
Moaning Myrtle's initials are Mew.
Maybe that's why.
Why would it's the significance of Mew?
Isn't that...
It's you, a Pokemon.
You're thinking of the Pokemon. To mewl, M-E-W-L, is to cry or whimper.
Okay.
Yeah, but...
But M-E-W.
But that's also the sound that like an animal makes, like a cat will mew.
Mew, yes.
Yeah.
That's why...
Yes, I know.
Cat Pokemon Mew.
Yes, but... yeah, so that's how it gets there, crying, like an animal's cry. Mm-hmm. And so for humans, it's like a whimper, but still... Why? I'm going to tweet at Elizabeth Warren about this. Are you aware that Moaning Myrtle is named after you? I just, what?
Oh man.
All right. Moving on from that, there is some stuff to talk about with her first name being Myrtle. So this I'm reading directly from the Harry Potter lexicon, but it says that the myrtle tree is a close relative of the willow tree. Moaning Myrtle is therefore a similar phrase to weeping willow. Her name is also possibly related to the Moaning Minnie, the British name for a German World War II artillery shell that made a distinctive moaning whine before it hit. I like the weeping willow thing. I think that's a cool connection.
But it also justifies... not having it be Weeping Wanda, because like that's
Wailing
too
Wanda.
Wailing Wanda. It's still too on okay. the nose.
Yeah, yeah. So I like that. It is also part of the pattern that Rowling has of naming female characters after plants. Petunia, Lily, Lavender. There's a lot of them. Yeah, cool connections there. Or one cool connection, one weird connection. And then I do have something directly from Rowling about the inspiration for Moaning Myrtle that I'd like to read. I do need to cut a little pieces of it out just to make it work and not spoil things, but I'm going to read it pretty much directly from the Pottermore page. The inspiration for Moaning Myrtle was the frequent presence of a crying girl in communal bathrooms, especially at the parties and discos of my youth. This does not seem to happen in male bathrooms, so I enjoyed placing Harry and Ron in such uncomfortable and unfamiliar territory in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And I think we talked about this a little bit with the Halloween chapter last book about how, for whatever reason, in women's bathrooms, it's, I don't want to say common, but I have heard people crying in women's bathrooms. And I believe you said then, I asked you that you'd never heard somebody crying in the men's bathroom.
No, I never have.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. She was a Ravenclaw when she was a student. We can't really talk about much more of her backstory because it'll be revealed as we keep reading. Mm-hmm. But this Pottermore page does say, as the decades have rolled by, Myrtle has made a name for herself as the most miserable ghost in the school, usually to be found lurking inside one of the toilets and filling the tiled space with her moans and howls. Oh, she's such a good character. And this is one of the few characters that I feel is given such life by the movie adaptation. She was so well cast, even though it was a 37-year-old woman playing her.
A skinny 37-year-old woman.
She's very small. She's 5 feet tall.
But because my association with Moaning Myrtle is so primarily the movies, like that's who I picture all the time. When they describe her, or when she describes herself as fat Myrtle, ugly Myrtle.
I don't know if we're to assume that she's actually fat. I mean, I'm totally here for
we do have
fat Myrtle, but.
Well, so Peeves calls out Hermione, which like, wow, that's very nice of you, Peeves, of like, don't insult potentially my friend.
Yeah.
But then Peeves kind of throws it all away.
Yeah.
And goes on to continue to insult her after putting Hermione in a bad situation.
Right. I think that.
But So she is described. Let's see. So Peeves calls her over and the narrator says, the squat ghost of a girl had glided over.
Huh. Maybe Myrtle is fat. I kind of just assumed that the fat Myrtle, ugly Myrtle thing came from those are the insults that teenage girls use for each other, regardless of whether it's based on any kind of reality.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So maybe it is not an accurate casting, but she plays the role so well.
Oh, like to the point where it's weird to see her in other things.
I do enjoy the only other thing that I really think about her being in is Bridget Jones's Diary. And one of the longest scenes of her in it, she's like talking to Bridget on the phone in a bathroom, which is very entertaining for me. I think that's the only other thing I've seen her in. What have you seen her in?
I don't remember. Let's see.
She was in Star Wars?
She was in which Star Wars?
She was the voice of Babu Frick.
Who is Babu Frick?
Do you remember in Rise of Skywalker, the little guy when they were, when they had to go into C-3PO's memory? That's Babu Frick.
That was her?
That's amazing.
That's very cool.
Oh, what else is she in? She was in all the Bridget Jones.
Okja is exactly what I'm remembering.
Okay, I have not seen that.
Oh, it's very good. Okja is like weird pig-ish creatures. I don't actually know a good way to describe it. It's very good. I liked it a lot.
Her casting in Bridget Jones came out before Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, so before she was Moaning Myrtle. So it is a funny coincidence that her seat in Bridget Jones has her in a bathroom, mm-hmm. and she would later go on to play Moaning Myrtle. Maybe that's how they chose her for the role. She was just so natural in that bathroom.
She sits so well in that toilet.
But yeah, Moaning Myrtle is the best. I love Moaning Myrtle. I think that Moaning Myrtle is part of the reason this is one of my favorite books.
Back to the book. Okay.
There is a detail when they're talking about the Death Day party and like all the people there. They say that the Wailing Widow came all the way up from Kent. How, and maybe this is going back into Ghost World, how do ghosts travel?
They can fly.
So they just fly across the country?
Maybe.
That seems could like a problem.
Ghost train or ghost brooms.
Okay.
I have no idea. Like I said earlier, that this is just like, it's just a small glimpse into the ghost world.
Yeah.
And like, that's all Harry gets.
Yeah.
You know, he just gets
and
a little taste.
That's all we get.
Yeah. Because Harry's our eyes for this world.
Right. And I think that's why Hermione is right to be like, yeah, I would love to go to a Death Day party. That'll be so cool. Because it seems like there are a lot of questions around ghost world that at least Hermione wants answered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's like, she has good ideas about some things too, of like,
right.
They go over to the spoiled food. They're so hungry and they see like burnt food, like charred all the way through.
Yeah, or Harry and Ron are fully like, rotten. This is disgusting.
And while Hermione is
grossed out, obviously.
Grossed out, she's holding her nose. She's like, well, it probably has a stronger flavor this way.
Right. And then we see
and then we get
ghost.
A very sad yeah. scene of a ghost moving his mouth through a rotten salmon. And Harry asks if the ghost can taste anything, and the ghost says, almost. I just felt so bad.
It is sad to think about.
Almost taste food.
Yeah, like imagine being alive forever and not being able to taste food anymore.
And then we get to the question of, are you hungry?
No, but I think you still like crave that feeling of eating food.
But also, like, if we look at other like curses and whatever, where, you know, sometimes they're still hungry, sometimes they're still craving things, but they don't get any satisfaction no matter what.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
It is,
we don't know.
It's sad though.
It is like,
this
even
whole
if,
thing is
even
really,
if you don't need to eat.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just want to taste
it. Taste it. Yeah. Yeah.
Taste.
So Harry, Ron, and Hermione just kind of slowly back out of this party.
Yeah. At the worst possible time.
I mean, worst possible time or best possible time? Worst possible time, I guess, for what happened. Okay, no, I see what you're saying.
At the worst possible time. Well, before they leave, we do get the Headless Hunt showing up very loudly.
They interrupt Nick's speech.
Well, they come before his speech. He's going over to say, like, oh, I'll tell the band to stop because I'm going to have my speech soon. Mm-hmm. And then he gets like three words into a speech before they start playing hockey with their heads.
Yes.
Of like not even talking over him or anything. They're just like they ignoring came over him. And yeah. playing a game and distracting everyone. And it doesn't feel good.
No.
But a game that he would not be able to play.
No. Yeah. It's sad. So Harry, Ron, and Hermione just kind of back out of the party. And as they're trying to head down to the Great Hall, hoping that there's some pudding left or something. And Harry hears the voice again that we saw when he was heading back to the common room from detention with Gilderoy. He hears the voice again saying, like, rip, tear, kill, I want blood, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not a good voice.
But also, so hungry.
Yeah.
For so long.
The voice wants pudding, too.
It wants pudding, or it wants to taste that salmon that yeah. that ghost couldn't have.
So they kind of follow the voice, and then they find Mrs. Norris hanging by her tail, stiff and lifeless, and a message on the wall that says, the Chamber of Secrets has been opened. Enemies of the air, beware.
And we get some interesting advice from Ron, who is like, let's say nothing, let's bolt.
I mean, I don't think he's wrong. He's like, we don't want to be caught anywhere near this because
you don't
want
to be caught anywhere near this, but also you have to tell somebody. You can't just run away and pretend it didn't happen.
I think this tracks.
That's so much more suspicious.
For a 12-year-old?
For a 12-year-old, it's still a terrible decision. I mean,
yeah, it's a terrible thing to just be like, let's leave it, make it somebody else's problem. But he knows that, and he's right, that people are going to point fingers at them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, dinner or dessert, I guess, ends right as they're deciding what to do. And all of the students rush into this corridor
from both directions,
trapping them there. And they all just stand there and stare at Harry, Ron, and Hermione in the middle, reading the wall. And then I got a problem here. This is like the last line of the chapter.
It's not out of character, but it's like totally unreasonable.
Malfoy shouts, enemies of the air, beware. You'll be next, mudbloods.
How does that not make you a suspect?
Yes. Yeah. That like later everybody is like, let's talk to Harry, Ron, Hermione, which, hey, valid.
They were the ones there. They were the three not near anyone that everyone walked over to. Oh, they're already here.
But Draco is, first of all, like celebrating. He just dropped a slur in front of the entire school. Like before it kind of happened set apart and at least Ron and the Gryffindor Quidditch team tried to confront him about it. Everybody here is just kind of like standing. And I guess maybe they're spooked.
They're all in shock. Yeah. And also it ends right there. So yeah. We don't know exactly what happens.
But like, he's just shouting this stuff. And the way that he's saying it implies that he has some kind of knowledge as to what this is referring to. This is crazy.
It's so crazy. And also, like, there are so many kids here.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are plenty of Slytherins with him. And he's the only one that cares, like, feels that they need to actually say that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not saying it's out of character, but it's so extreme.
It is extreme. Because, like, again, the scene before, he was, first of all, reacting to something Hermione said, which I'm not saying it's okay to call somebody a slur because they said something to you, even though Hermione was right with what she said to her, said to him. But to just shout it in front of what seems like a good portion of the school. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then he sees no repercussions.
No. And I guess maybe you could make the argument that like the professors are distracted by like the whole Chamber of Secrets thing.
Yeah. And the professors don't have time. The professors do show up afterwards.
Right.
And like that's clearly not the focus. But still, yes, there's something horrible written on the wall. But somebody just read it and then said a threat right afterwards.
Right.
You have to mention that to the professor also.
And you would think that while Harry, Ron, and Hermione are being questioned about this, that they would be like, Malfoy seemed to know what was up.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is a wild line. I'm don't know. It works.
She describes his cold eyes alive and his usually bloodless face flushed as he grinned at the sight of the hanging, immobile cat.
Ugh.
Like, that just sounds evil. Like,
he's a little
set
punk.
Up to be a foil. He's set up, but he's also like a 12-year-old kid.
But then we have to consider like a 12-year-old kid raised in the type of house that he was, and with the level of entitlement that he has and the level of...
And like what he definitely hears at home.
Yes. And the level of, I think, invincibility he feels at school as far as eluding getting in trouble. And because his dad is like a muckety muck and, you know, nobody can really, really, really get him in trouble for certain things because his dad will just swoop in and save the day. I guess I understand him feeling it okay to say these things.
But it's just like, it's a horrifying level of empowerment he felt in that moment.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the like word I was kind of fishing for.
Sure.
It's like he felt empowered by seeing that. He was like, all my internal feelings are correct because it's written in blood on this wall.
Well, that's
of like seeing a hate symbol and being like, oh yeah. Awesome.
That is kind of how people are radicalized. So, yeah. I mean, so that in that way, I guess it is really accurate that people often or certain people hold these beliefs, but usually keep them to themselves. They keep it within their houses and behind closed doors because they know it's not acceptable to say out in the broad world that there will be repercussions for it. But as soon as they see somebody else say it out in public, it's not as scary to step forward and then say it themselves because they're not the first one to do it. Mm-hmm. And this is often how, unfortunately, young people are radicalized on the internet, that they see other people dropping slurs all the time or using hate symbols and hate speech. And so they feel that's acceptable and it's okay to say these things and it gives me power to say these things. And so it is sad to me that Malfoy has been poisoned in this way, but it's also just horrifying to think about him saying this in a hallway with probably dozens of muggle-born students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a way to end this chapter. Yeah.
This chapter that we were talking about as being like so fun, the ghosts and the Moaning Myrtle and like, oh God, oh.
Like, sure, we led into this with Harry chasing a...
Yeah, I guess we did kind of
distant voice go over saying, that
pretty
like,
quick.
Kill, kill.
Yeah.
And Harry runs up the stairs saying, like, it's going to kill someone. Yeah. Which, like, good on him. He's trying to find and stop this weird disembodied voice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because he knows at this point that he's the only one that can hear it.
Yeah.
So, and that is within character, even if he wasn't the only one that could hear it, for Harry to be like, oh, no, I have to do something about this.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Especially with him being the only one who can hear it. He's like, I got to figure out what this is all about. I got to make sure that I'm not crazy.
Mm-hmm. But then also... tell somebody.
But see, this is something that we talked about, God, I think in the beginning of Philosopher's Stone. So I don't blame you for remembering that. This often comes up when people talk about the Harry Potter series, that a lot of these situations that Harry and his friends find themselves in could be solved if they just told an adult. And indeed, Hermione often kind of pressures them, tell an adult. But
yes, he has a distrust of yes. Most authority figures.
Because he was abused as a child. And often when we see them actually try to go to an adult at Hogwarts, they're often not taken seriously.
Or the adult decides, like, oh, there's nothing we can do at this point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't blame him. Yes, he should tell an adult about the voice. But but he doesn't want to make himself seem like he's crazy either.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's hearing these things and then murders are happening.
Yeah.
He might be thinking he's going crazy.
It's a tough thing to navigate for a 12-year-old.
Yeah. I'm not saying like, oh, he's
wrong,
making a horrible decision. Yeah, he's still wrong. He should tell somebody. But
yeah. So that brings us to Spell of the Week.
Spell of the Week. Oh, and it seems like ages ago that we talked about... there is a cat corpse hanging from a wall right now. Let's go back just a few pages to the very beginning of the chapter when everyone was sick with colds. Just mild colds. The common cold was the big problem at the beginning of this chapter. And it had an instant solution, which was pepper up potion, where it did work instantaneously, but the users did have steam pouring out of their ears for hours afterwards. Yeah.
And there's a fun detail there that after Percy had forced Ginny to take some, that with her red hair, it just looked like her head was on fire.
Yeah. Which is very good. And it's also like really illustrating just how orange her head is.
Yes.
So this is not a spell. This is
It's a potion.
But still, we moved past just magical spells, despite this still being Spell of the Week.
Yes.
The Pepero Potion was originally created by Linfred of Stinchcombe. He was also known as the Potterer. This was in the 12th century, and he is an ancestor of Harry's. This is from Pottermore, by the way.
Yes. And this was before there were last names. So people were usually known by either where they're from or what they do. And so the Potterer eventually
became just Potter.
Yes.
As when people started having last names.
Right. And so this is James is Harry's father's like ancestry.
Yeah. I know there are like very good examples of like this is just straight up a job.
Like
and
Baker.
For some reason, I'm
the last name Baker.
Baker, yeah. Yeah,
that's an easy one.
I'm like, for some reason, I'm blanking on things.
Yeah, not every last name is like this,
no.
Mind you, but many are.
Well, so Linfred originally created it, but Glover Hipworth perfected the potion in the 18th or 19th century. And this is according to a chocolate frog card in some of the video games. Do we know specifically which ones?
I believe it was Prisoner of Azkaban. I don't know what platform.
Okay.
That's one of the many problems I have with the Harry Potter wiki. They often source the video games, but they don't mention which, like if it's the PlayStation 2 version, because the Harry Potter video games differ wildly depending on the platform you play it on.
Mm-hmm. There's also a real life Pepper Up Tea, which is... just more of a fan thing.
Yeah, it's not officially licensed.
Yeah, but the website is Adagio, A-D-A-G-I-O, is .com?
Yes. I'm not going to link it in the show notes because they can pay us if they want advertising, but we can say it out loud and you can Google it if you really want to know.
Okay. But so they have Harry Potter-inspired teas. So there's a pepper-up tea, which has peppermint, decaf Ceylon, black tea, vanilla, and hazelnut.
Would you drink that tea?
I would try it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what Ceylon tastes like, but if it made steam come out of my ears, I would be impressed.
So that's the Pepper Up Potion.
Yeah.
It does appear in several of the video games as a like restoration item. I don't totally remember because in the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets Game Boy Color game, there's Pepper Up Potions and then... another type of potion, and one restores your like magic and one restores your health. I don't remember which one the Pepper Up Potion is, but it does appear in a lot of the video games as like a healing item. So that is Spell of the Week, and that brings us to emails. And we have an email this week.
Okay.
This email is from my sister Becca, who has previously written into the show about I think she wrote in about the broomstick issue where like Harry gets a much better broomstick than everyone else and this gives him an unfair advantage. So this email, the subject line is the money, which I found very funny. And it reads, you talked about Harry's money in the Flourish and Blotts episode. Where did Harry get all his money from? I know it was what his parents left him when they died, but where did they get it from? Do we ever hear about either of his parents having jobs? Love, Becca, sent from my iPhone.
I'm sure she intended for that to be part of the email.
Yes.
I'm glad you read it aloud. Well, most old wizard families just have money. It gets accrued and hoarded. We just read that his ancestor developed a healing potion, a common cold healing potion.
So there's a little more to it than that. I think we actually talked about this in 103. No, not 103. That was the letters from no one. Whichever one where Harry and Hagrid go to Gringotts, where all Harry's money comes from. So you're right that it is from his ancestry. Linfred did invent the Pepper Up Potion. He also invented a potion called Skellgrow, which we will see later on. So that was a lot of his family's fortune. But another one of his ancestors quadrupled that fortune. This is coming directly from Pottermore. This was Harry's grandfather, so James's dad. Mm-hmm. His name was Fleamont Potter. And he invented a potion called Sleek Easy's Hair Potion, which is like a hair gel.
Oh, this
we did talk about
this. Was it in that chapter?
It was not mentioned directly. No, it's from Pottermore, but I'm pretty sure we talked about it.
It sounds very familiar.
So I'll read this directly from Pottermore. So it was Fleamon who took the family gold and quadrupled it by creating magical Sleek Easy's Hair Potion. Two drops tames even the most bothersome Barnet. He sold the company at a vast profit when he retired, but no amount of riches could compensate him or his wife, Euphema, for their childlessness. They had given up hope of a son or daughter when, to their shock and surprise, Euphema found that she was pregnant and their beloved boy, James, was born. So that's where most of Harry's family money comes from. As for the rest of their Becca's email about
what's the significance of them being childless until retirement?
I don't know. That's what it says on Pottermore. This is like from a whole page that has like Harry's family history. But I do think that this is interesting that Harry has a legacy of potion brewers in his family.
It is.
Yeah, it's a weird little coincidence, but I didn't mean to read that far, truth be told. I thought there was more about the potion. But to answer the rest of Becca's question, she asked, did we hear about either of Harry's parents having jobs? Unfortunately, Harry's parents were killed when they were 21. So if we're to assume that somebody graduates Hogwarts when they're 17, they didn't have a ton of time to establish a career. Granted, there is no higher education that we know of in the Harry Potter universe, like they weren't in college or anything, but we will later learn what they were getting up to in between 17 and 21, but they were in hiding for a lot of that time.
There was
as well.
A good chunk of time in hiding, and like regardless there was a war going on,
right?
So I don't know how much of a career they would have had without the context of later books.
Yeah. So we'll learn more, a little more about that interim period, or at least we can talk about it in more detail when we learn certain things. But no, so Harry's parents did not have a job. They were kind of just living off of James's family money. And that's what's sitting in Harry's bank account. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer. Yeah, I do want to look into now the Weasley family legacy, if we know much about that, and why they don't have money. I think we talked about the answer. Oh, you do?
Yes. So like old wizarding families owned a lot of land and essentially would like sell to people or tax people.
Okay.
They were like landlords essentially. And the Weasley people let people move in.
Okay.
So they lost all their land to just people moving in and, you know, not knowing better. This is because they technically owned it, but they didn't care to stop those people from living on it or charge them anything.
That fits.
Yeah.
So that's some of the fun history, I guess, an explanation for why Harry's bank account is loaded. All right. So that is our email. If you would like to send us an email, either with questions or clarifications or corrections, anything like that, you can send it to owlpost@podtrivicustotalis.com or just use the email us page on our website. You can also interact with the show by leaving us a review. At the time of recording this, the website podchaser.com is donating 25 cents to the Meals on Wheels COVID-19 Relief Fund. So please do leave us a review on podchaser.com. You can get there by going to podchaser.com/podtrivicustotalis. 25 cents for a review that you leave. You can leave a review for the show. You can leave a review for every episode, and every single review will give us 25 cents. Well, not us 25 cents. It will donate 25 cents. And then they will double that donation if we reply to the review. So I promise to reply to every single review that anybody leaves us on Podchaser, and so that we can raise money for a great cause. If you are listening to this many years in the future, that's great. That means that we have a future. So maybe that money is not going to Meals on Wheels anymore. Maybe that donation thing has ended, but you can still leave us a review on podchaser.com, assuming that you have internet access and you can.
If you didn't, where did you get this podcast?
Yeah, if we're not living in a wasteland by then. So you can do that. You can also follow us on Twitter @Podtrificus. You can like our Facebook page, I guess, if you want to use Facebook and give data to them. You can go to our website, podtrivicustotalis.com, where there are detailed show notes. You can listen to the episodes, and there's some transcripts for the episodes and that sort of thing. And you can join us for Chapter 9,
The Writing on the Wall.